broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of the Investor Exchange. I'm your host today, Louis van Copenhagen, and joining me in a small studio gathering is our co-host, Brett Dickinson.
Louis, I've got a little gift for you this morning.
Oh, what's that?
I'll see if I can get it for you. Here we go. It might take... Oh, it's taken a little bit longer than I planned.
It's all right.
But it's a gift that I hope you appreciate.
I like gifts. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's it. You and I.
I thought that was rather fitting.
Oh, yeah. Just the two of us.
So that might be our theme for the next few weeks.
Beautiful. We do have a few weeks, just the two of us in the studio, while Joel and Steph have some travel time. So how nice for them.
Yeah, lucky.
Yeah, lucky them. All right, very good. Well, shall we get into today's episode, Brett?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, fantastic. Well, look, I think we need to talk about what's been happening in financial markets because there's not an event, so to speak, but there's definitely been some headlines about recent volatility in the share markets.
Yeah.
The Australian share market, as of our recording yesterday, the share market lost 2.9% in one day. And this always triggers the headlines to come out in the news.
Yeah.
The headline, it's a formula. I see this every time there's a substantial loss in a single day on the share market. And the headline is a certain number of billions of dollars were, quote, wiped off.
Yeah, it's always the word wiped, isn't
it? It's always that word wiped off, like it just vanished into thin air. Wiped off the stock market, the worst day since insert date here, as investors are scared of insert news event here.
Yes. Yeah, that's pretty much the formula, isn't it?
It's basically it. And in the share market, it happens. So 2.9% lost in the share market in yesterday's trading, $60 billion wiped off the share market. And the thing about the share market is this can happen. And the reason it can happen is because on the share market, you've got the ability to trade in large volumes of assets that are exactly comparable to other assets. What I mean by that is if one person is selling Commonwealth Bank shares and another person is buying Commonwealth Bank shares, there can be millions of those shares traded and they're all Commonwealth Bank shares.
They're identical.
They're identical, that's right. And then you have another company and the shares that are bought and sold there are identical. And the transactions can happen instantly and at very low transaction cost relative to other investments. And my thinking is, well, can the property market do that?
No.
Can the property market go down by 2.9% in one day and have $60 billion wiped off?
Well, theoretically it could, but how would you know?
Well, that's where my thinking comes to. Now, my wife and I were in the property market looking to buy on the weekend of Saturday the 11th of October 2008.
2008, yeah, okay.
Now, this was as the GFC was coming about.
Yes.
And the high of the market had been late the previous year and it was declining and had been declining for a while. And by 11th of October 2008, the share market had fallen by about 1,000 points in the 2 weeks before. And it had already fallen by 25% and then it fell by another 20% and there was absolute fear in all sectors of the economy, of the community, and we were out looking for somewhere to buy. And we were the only ones.
Right. So any of the open homes?
Any of the open homes, it was just us.
Wow.
It was dead.
Yeah.
We had the agents, and the agents were right on us because we were the only people to give attention.
Yeah.
So the question is, can the property do that? Can the property market do that? Not in an immediately measurable way.
Correct, yes.
But there can be an event which does immediately impact the property market.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that in order for that to then flow through takes a long time.
And yeah, as you say, and to be quantified and measured.
That's right.
That's the challenge.
Exactly. So at 11 October 2008, no one would have been able to measure the results of that weekend until those contracts had been negotiated, signed, and then settled.
Yes.
And then even then, the settlement times are different.
Mm-hmm.
Some are 30-day settlements, some are 90-day settlements.
Yeah.
Ours in particular turned into a 130-day settlement because of complications on the vendor's side. They couldn't settle for a while. So there's, again, not a clear way to measure it in the property market.
Nope. And even if you could have that information, you know, like multiple transactions all at one time and that information all available to say, let's just quantify it as those figures.
Yep.
You've still got variables in the product that's being traded.
That's exactly right. The house that was bought over there is not the same as the house that was sold over there.
Yeah.
So how can you compare the two and actually measure? Well, what was sold this weekend is exactly the same as last weekend, and we can measure the difference. You can't do that.
No, very tough.
Yep.
And that's why, unfortunately, in the property industry, the median is the only way of giving us that sort of indicator, but it's a flawed measurement because of that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And again, the GFC was a great example of the median price giving a flawed indication, because what the transactions that had been happening before and then after the GFC, when the first home buyer incentives were ramped up, you had a huge amount of volume of transactions at the lower end of the scale, which statistically means the median transaction price is lower, but it doesn't mean
that's not indicative of the whole value
of
the market.
It doesn't mean the value of the market's come down. Anyway, so that's the share market versus the property market. And what it gets me to thinking, and what I want to talk about today, is how often should you actually look at your investments? Because any one of our clients who calls in now and says, oh, I'm really... We haven't had any. But if there were, a client who called in and said, oh, I'm really worried about what the share market has done. I've lost 2.9% and the newspaper's telling me that $60 billion has been lost. How much of that $60 billion is mine?
Yeah.
How much have I lost?
Yeah.
Had wiped off.
Yeah.
I haven't had any of those calls. But the question is, how often should you look at your investments? Whether it's share markets or property markets.
Yeah.
And it gets me thinking too, how often do people usually look at their investments? But is that even relevant? When it comes to share markets, most people are only invested in their super funds.
True.
And most people only get their super fund statements yearly.
And the majority of, I would assume the majority of people that are investors in the stock market, whether it's super or personally, more than likely aren't actively making those decisions. So may not even be monitoring it personally.
Exactly. That's right. And that's the distinction I came to. Mm. So the first question is, are you self-managing your investment or are you a professional investment manager? Because if you're self-managing, it's very different to if you have someone else managing your portfolio, if you've got an advisor or a fund manager or some other expert who is doing it for you.
Mm.
So if you're the one who is managing it professionally or self-managing, in the share market, you need to have some kind of daily method.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is you don't necessarily have to look at it daily, but you do need to have alerts set up so that...
For big changes in pricing or...
For big changes. Yeah. I mean, the basic risk management strategy is a stop-loss strategy.
Yes.
And if you're not using a stop-loss strategy, well then I would question your level of knowledge and your level of risk management.
Mm.
So for a stop-loss to be working, you don't have to look at the share price every day, but you do need some kind of alert to tell you when some share price movement is happening so that you can take action immediately that day or the next day.
Yes. Yeah.
So you don't need to be looking daily on the share market, but you do need to have an alert. And I would be suggesting you do monitor your price movements. Weekly is pretty good. Monthly is probably too long.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot can happen in a month.
But I'll tell you what's more important if you're a professional manager is to have a method.
Agreed.
You could look at it daily, but if you're looking at it daily with no method, and I've been here in my own personal days of investment management, you can look at it for too long. And without enough knowledge, you will circle around the knowledge that you do have, and then you'll query the things that you don't know, and you'll go in circles and arrive at it. And you'll have indecision issues. You'll have emotional biases, because if there's pieces of information you don't know, then you can become fearful of certain things, or you can have an overweighted bias towards other factors.
Yes.
So you need to have a method. Good on you for looking at it daily if you are looking at it daily, but what are you doing when you look at it daily?
Yeah.
Are you just looking at the price and then worrying about where it might go, or are you looking at your actual indicators? Are you looking at, all right, the price movement has been this, what's the volume been, what's the trend analysis, is there any new company news today versus yesterday, what are the factors that are actually changing, and you go through your method. So if you have a daily method, then do it daily. Now, if you're a professional, if you're not a professional share market manager, if you have someone else who is doing the professional managing, how often should you review? So we tend to say, check in on it about every 6 months, but any investment strategy, if you're not reviewing the investments, if you're reviewing the investment strategy, you want to check in on it probably every 6 months.
Yeah.
But you only want to do a big review of how it has compared to alternatives over a more decent period of time. And we suggest that you need to give any investment strategy about 5 years know whether it's worked or not.
Yep.
3 years is a time frame where you might start getting a feeling, but you still don't have enough time to get enough in across enough of a cycle.
Yeah.
So it is a much longer period of time. And the reason is you can have a great investment strategy, but there is no investment strategy that works in all types of markets across the whole cycle.
And can I just ask on this point here, Louis, when we're talking about reviewing the strategy in a 3 to 5 year time frame, we're not necessarily talking about whether a particular stock you own is being reviewed in that time frame. You might be reviewing that in a lot earlier time cycles than that.
Correct, that's right.
But the strategy of why you bought and why you sold, or how you do,
exactly,
is what you're reviewing.
That's right. So what you're really reviewing in the longer time frame, what you're really reviewing is the methodology of the manager, advisor, or professional manager. If you are the professional manager or the self-manager of your own investments, then you need to be looking at those companies you're invested in on a daily or weekly, maybe monthly basis, but as long as you have a method to it.
So we're not assessing what you've bought and sold, we're assessing how you've decided to buy and sell.
Yes, that's right. If you're reviewing your advisor or your fund manager, then you're reviewing their philosophy and their methodology and whether it's actually generated results.
Yep, yep.
But any manager is going to have periods of time where their particular strategy just isn't favoured in the investment markets.
Yeah.
So you can expect in any five-year period of time, there's going to be a 12 to 18-month period of time of underperformance.
Yes.
We tell our clients that's what should be expected.
Yep.
But then over a five-year period of time, there's enough time for 12 to 18 months of bad underperformance, but 12 to 18 months of okay and above average performance. And then there is usually a small window of really good outperformance, which is amazing.
Right.
Which makes us look great when that happens.
Yeah.
And if we're lucky, then we get a longer period of overperformance, and there does become a point where it's not luck anymore. It is a really good method that is working.
There's validation.
There can be validation.
Yeah.
And you only get that validation from 5 years and longer.
And this is a challenge that I'm just picking up in where this conversation's going, is that someone that may be just starting to invest with an advisor or a manager of their funds,
yep,
that person might be in one of those scenarios where they're having their good run.
Yep.
And suddenly this person believes they're God, so to speak. They think, yeah, wow, this person can do no wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they just throw everything that, or they put all their faith in it,
yep,
and then it might turn in a year or two or whatever.
Yep.
And they've got so much faith in it that maybe it was unfounded.
Yeah.
But it could also go the other way, that
yep,
the person that you're putting your faith in is having their lean time.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't believe in them so much, but if you had have held on and they got through that lean time and their superior performance that was going to happen,
yep,
is what you need to be in there for the long term to really see.
Yep.
So that's why that 3 to 5 years is really only the fair way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, if that's for the share markets, well then, how often should you look at your property market investments? I'll go to Brett for part of this question, because you are a property expert. So if you have someone who has an existing portfolio of investments, how often would you review those actual investments?
So you'd look at the portfolio as a whole as one thing, but each individual asset, a lot of that would come down to obviously when they first bought it. So there's a couple of variables here that probably need to come into dictating this decision and time frame would be, how much capital have they got allocated within their property portfolio, and what's their timeline for using that capital, whether it's retirement or something else?
Yep.
So obviously that's a separate issue. But if we just take that out of the equation, say let's just have a blanket approach to how often to review.
Yep.
I would assume you would be reviewing the portfolio from the perspective of, are the assets working or not, around every 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
Because with property, by the time you buy and settle, the transaction costs and everything else, by the time a market starts to move, it's at least 3 years before you can start to see whether, you know, the area or the, you know, the median for that location is moving in a given direction.
Yep.
With consistency.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So if you've bought a certain property, you can't tell if that investment is working after 1 year.
No.
No.
No, the only part of that we would assume you would be looking at in the first year is whatever the cash flow component is, based on your outgoings and your incomings on your rent.
Yeah, okay.
Because a lot of the time when you're buying it, we're always advising that the major returns are capital growth when you're buying residential property.
Yep.
But in order for you to achieve that capital growth, you've got to be able to hold the property. To be able mm-hmm. to hold it, you need to be able to make sure you're paying the mortgage and generating enough income from rent.
Yep.
So that you're not out of pocket too much.
Yep.
So that's the only part of it you'd maybe be reviewing more regularly, is the income side of it, income and outgoings.
That's right. So if you're self-managing a property portfolio or a property investment, or even if you're a professional manager, it is that time frame of around 3 years to review an investment that you might have taken up.
And keep in mind too that whenever we assist someone in buying a property for investment purposes, we're always setting the ground rules that this is a long-term 10-year plus investment.
Yep.
That's typically what we're saying. You need to be willing to hold this and expect to be holding this for beyond 10 years.
So
to review it inside of 3 years is only just saying, are we on track with that 10-year horizon or more?
Yep. Okay.
And maybe, you know, but to do it any earlier is sounding a bit like a knee-jerk reaction and maybe listening to the media more than the reality.
That's right. That's right. I will put a little caveat on that, because where I do suggest more frequent check-ins is for people that are still trying to acquire more property. Mm-hmm. That position can change, and I'd be suggesting a review every 6 months.
Sure.
Because in a period of 6 months, property valuations can change.
Yes, can. Yep.
Which means from today, if you look at your property portfolio today and you say, okay, I'm not going to make any changes, then in 6 months' time, if valuations have changed and if other circumstances have changed, maybe your income or something else, you might now have borrowing capacity to buy your next property investment, which you didn't.
Correct. Yeah.
So I'm not saying don't review your personal situation and don't review your ability to buy another investment property. And in that 6 month period of time, if you've got a property portfolio, then you might have a property from years ago that is now coming up towards its 3 year review.
Yeah.
So we still have clients on a 6-monthly review program
yep.
to review their portfolio and how things are going.
Yep.
But if it's a particular asset that's only 6 months old, it's too early to say anything. But if there's a portfolio, then there might be a property that is now time to review and a review of the personal circumstances to see if we need to be adding to the portfolio.
I guess the way I'm sensing the answer that we're looking for here is that there's probably a reason to review at each of those timeframes with subtly different purposes.
Yeah. Yep, you're exactly right.
So, yeah, so there is definitely a reason to review that portfolio in a 6-month time or a regular 6-month timeframe,
yep.
but that might be a different reason for the review than the 3 to 5 year timeframe one.
Yeah, exactly.
And the two would gel together to hopefully an even longer term timeframe about what your overall wealth is.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. There's one more point I want to make about the number of times you look at your portfolio, whether it's shares or property, and your finances in general.
Mm-hmm.
The human brain tends to only be in a good future-looking frame of mind for 2% of the time.
That's not a lot.
That's not a lot.
No.
And it actually takes a lot of brain energy to be in a state where you can think of your future self and your future goals and your long-term planning and your current self and make the call of balancing your current resources and your current lifestyle versus your future goals and planning for how things are getting there. It's actually quite hard to get into that state of mind and to have all the information in front of you and all the number crunching
and have it current
and then make good decisions based on it.
That's quite a bit of effort.
It is quite a bit of effort. Which is why we do reviews every 6 months. We don't do them more often than that because there's not enough new information to reconsider.
Yep.
And it's quite tiring.
Yeah.
If you are checking your share portfolio every day and it's someone else's job to check it every day, if you're looking every day, you're going to get exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's nothing you can
Such
do about
a drain.
It. Every day, I tell people you can expect the share market to be up or down 1% every day.
Yeah. There will be movement every day.
There's going to be
in
movement
one way or another.
Every day. Yep. And there's going to be some days where it's a 2% movement, and there's going to be the very odd day where it's a 3% movement in one day, like we had yesterday.
So within that then, Louis, are you maybe educating some people about how much movement within a day is acceptable? Or is that not necessarily part of the scenario?
No, that's not part of the scenario because once the move has happened, it's already happened.
Yeah.
If you're the self-manager of your investments or if you're the professional manager, well then, yes, you will have strategies in place for certain price movements. And then it's time to execute those strategies that you've already decided to execute when a certain investment happens.
Yep.
And that's why you have an investment method.
Yes.
So there's going to be a lot of people today who should be on their computers because they are a self-manager of their share portfolio or a professional manager. And they'll be changing their positions.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yep.
Do it.
Yep.
Follow your method.
Yes.
And you should, and in your method, when you got into a certain share, you should have had your strategies or plans that if a certain price movement happens, then you exit.
Yep.
Or if a certain price movement happens, then you reinvest more or whatever your plan is.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's time to execute.
Yep.
And that was my topic for the day.
Well, pretty sound advice. Look, I can't get away from when you hear it all mapped out from an expert like yourself, it's common sense to, once it's explained to you, to say, yeah, of course, that. Why wouldn't we do it that way? But sometimes it's hard if you don't have the experience or the knowledge to know that that's the process.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And it sometimes sounds funny coming from us when we actually tell clients, stop checking your share portfolio.
Yes.
Because we don't want you to stop checking, but we do want you to not be stressed out about it because the strategy is a long-term one and it takes a lot longer than just a few days or weeks or months to see what the performance actually is.
Yep. Yeah. And I guess that is the benefit that property does have to some degree from a mentality side of thing is that you can't check the price of your property the next day. Sure, you can see what one down the road's maybe sold for recently, but you can't always directly relate that to yours.
That's so right. That's right.
It sort of removes that compulsion from people.
Yes, absolutely. So, all right, listeners, we will take a break and we'll be back after this message.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Now we'll kick it over to Brett. What have you got for this week, Brett, in property?
I'm going to sell the drama a bit today, Louis. I've got some bad news that I want to share, but it's not bad news in terms of, well, for some people it will be bad news, but it's probably not bad news they're not aware of. It's just, hey, it's time to really wake up and realize it.
Okay.
But for the others that aren't necessarily in this position, it's a warning.
Okay, let me take a breath, because it's not usual for us to be dramatic.
No, it's not. And I guess the reason I'm saying I'm being dramatic is because the title of the article that I really delved into here, and I thought there's a lot of merit in what this particular person's saying, is he's called a current part of the Australian residential real estate market the bubonic plague.
Whoa.
So that's pretty dramatic.
Jeez.
Okay. Now, when you look at the reasons why he's saying it, I go, you know what? He's got a bit of a point here. So let's layer this up and get into what he's talking about.
Okay.
So basically what he's saying is that the construction industry is critically ill. Now, the reason he's saying that it's critically ill is we've got some really bad things going on around the country at the moment in a lot of the mass-produced, high-density type buildings.
Okay.
Okay, we've got the cladding issues, we've got cracks in buildings, mm-hmm. and we've just got inferior quality overall compared to buildings built significantly longer ago.
Right.
Okay.
Because you see buildings from the 1920s that are still standing 100 years later.
Correct.
They're not cracking.
No, they're not cracking. And even if you've been in, if you're an owner or you've visited some of these sort of 40 to 80 story high rises in some of the capital cities around the country, I notice when I go in there that there's a lack of amenity. They're very dark a lot of the time,
mm-hmm.
and there's really not a lot of insulation from noise. You know, I've visited friends or people at times, and you can quite often hear the lifts, the hallway noise, the neighbouring noise.
Yes.
Okay, so he's highlighting that there's a real problem in the quality of those types of dwellings that have been built over the last 20 years.
Right.
And that's what he's likening to the equivalent of the bubonic plague.
Oh, okay.
And he's got more data to say why. He says it's also reflected in the performance of these types of properties when compared to houses.
Right.
So some of the data he's saying over the last 5 years, the differential between growth in median house price and median apartment price in Australia's biggest cities was circa 20%.
Wow.
And in some cases, more than 30%.
Jeez.
So meaning when you had a chance to buy, had you bought a house or bought one of these types of high density, high rise apartments,
mm-hmm.
And over that period of time, the house has radically outperformed the apartment in terms of capital growth. So that's a pretty compelling argument.
Yep.
So, you know, obviously he goes into more and more details about saying how a lot of these dwellings are laced with repair bills worth millions of dollars due to extreme structural integrity concerns.
Yes.
And he calls that there was an absence of good hygiene within the construction sector from around the early 90s through to the last few years.
Right.
Where there was a lack of prudent quality control.
Okay.
Now, councils and governments have started to try to, you know, they've probably seen a little bit of this coming about. So in Melbourne and Victoria, there was what they called the BAD system, which is the Better Apartment Design.
Okay.
And that was because there were a lot of these buildings getting approval and being built where there were small apartments where there might have been a pillar somewhere in the living room that didn't make it functional and bedrooms with not enough natural light and, you know, bathrooms that were barely bigger than a closet that, you know, people were buying off the plan. And then by the time they actually bought them and they realized it's really, no one wants it.
Yeah.
It's hard to resell and it's hard to even find someone that wants to live in it.
Yeah.
So there's been some sweeping changes over time. But mm-hmm. the issue he's saying is that when you look back to when the apartment boom really started to hit, and there's some more data here to give an example as to how much apartments have encroached on, you know, the overall residential market.
Yeah.
Over the 16 years of Australian Bureau of Statistics data, up until December 2018, Australia added over a million attached dwellings, so a million apartments.
Right.
Just within the eight capital cities.
Right, wow.
Okay. Now that, when you look at the total amount of dwellings within Australia, is just on 10%. So we've got approximately 10 million residential dwellings in Australia.
Yep.
So 10% of those were built in the last 16 years as apartments.
Jeez.
So that's a significant increase in apartments in that time.
Yep.
Now, when you compare that to when apartments in Australia first started to even become a type of dwelling, which is sort of the old flats that we're talking about in the 70s, there was a massive surge in the 70s of the construction of the low-density sort of 4 to 10 apartment blocks, sort of maybe one or two levels, you know, but apartments where they're co-joined.
Yes.
So you're not on your own title, you're strata titled. But if you look at a lot of those, they were those solid red or yellow brick apartment complexes that are solid and they've stood the test of time. You know, that sure, they might need a lick of paint and maybe an interior renovation, but they don't have any structural issues. There's not any ongoing maintenance that's really going to hurt you.
Yep.
And, you know, they've actually performed reasonably well in terms of resale values over their lifespan.
Yep.
So his concern is now that a lot of these, what he calls Lego-type dwellings that have been constructed in the capital cities have been built with such inferior quality, in such poor workmanship, that over time, they're probably going to be demolished in a half the life than some of these other 70s types
really?
Of flats.
Really?
And not only that, because of the volume of them and the lack of, I guess, a desire for a lot of people to live in them once they experience it, it's hard to find enough buyers to buy them. And then when they keep populating more comparable at the same price, how are they going to grow in value?
Right.
So this is why he's called it the bubonic plague. And when you hear a lot of this data, you can sort of go, well, there's a fair bit of reason behind that that assumption.
Yeah.
And to put this in perspective from where we sit as property advocates when we look at investments, we've always shied away from high density apartments. Now, we're not against apartments as an asset class.
Yep.
So let's make that clear. We're not saying that all apartments are bad here. I do tend to agree with a lot of what he's saying here is that the high rise where there's just tower after tower beside each other, sort of anything above that 10 to 12 stories and going upwards is where these problems lie.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so good quality apartments in more suburban areas can still be good performers. Something that might only be sort of somewhere 3 to 5 level designs where there's something a bit more unique about it, where a downsizer might look at wanting to stay in a suburb they've grown up in, but they just want less maintenance.
Yep.
Or they can still get a large apartment close to all the amenities and the people around them that they know.
Yeah.
When you go to the, you know, the central areas of the city or the, you know, the big high density areas where they're being built, so the likes in Brisbane of say Fortitude Valley or the CBD, you know, in Sydney it's always been around the CBD, now even out to Parramatta as well. Melbourne, we've got South Bank and now South Yarra and Docklands. These are the areas that have really struggled to see any price growth, and we tend to think are probably going to continue to see price growth, especially in comparison to either smaller blocks of apartments sort of in that 5 to 10 kilometre range out from the CBD, or compared to housing and town housing.
Yeah,
it's a warning to anyone that is either looking to buy an apartment for investment purposes.
Yep.
And I say for investment purposes because if you're looking to buy it because you want to live there and you're happy with the cost of that as a dwelling versus renting, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's a lifestyle choice about where you choose to live. And yes, we could still maybe look at it and say, well, you might do better if you bought a house 20 kilometres away and over the 20 or 30 years it's going to be worth more as part of your overall wealth. But if that's not the lifestyle choice you want, that's your decision.
Yeah, yep, okay. Mm. Very interesting, Brett. Thank you so much for the insight.
No problem.
We will take another quick break. We'll be back soon.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning, and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03-8657-7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
And welcome back. Welcome back.
Where are we up to?
We're up to...
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Woo! All right.
We got there pretty quick today. It's amazing what we can get through when it's just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
You and I.
What have you got this week,
Brad? Oh, Louis, I've actually got to tell you, this is a shit story. Yeah, I mean that literally. This would be something that would traumatise a lot of people. Yeah. So a Canadian woman was looking to attend an air show in Calgary, in Canada, of course. Due to strong winds, it was called off.
Right.
So they'd attended, realised no show happening. With the family, they were about to leave. She decided, look, I just need to quickly go to the port-a-loo.
Uh-huh.
High winds, port-a-loo. Oh, do no. I need to spell out what happened next? Oh. Unfortunately, blown around, knocked over, dirty water everywhere.
Oh.
It turned to shit.
Wow.
Unfortunately. That poor lady, not a nice day.
Jeez. I am reporting on Florida Man.
North American today.
Yes. On a sidebar, I've heard there is actually a Twitter account called Florida Man who presents himself as a superhero because...
and he's on the outside?
Because Florida Man is always in the news.
Ah.
And this week, right. Florida Man has driven a golf cart into a Walmart shopping center. So authorities went into a Walmart store to find someone on a golf cart who was blocking the entrance to the liquor store section, and he was apparently terrorizing shoppers and demanding to speak to a manager.
You cannot be serious.
So the police were called, and it gets better.
Oh.
As he's talking to police, he tries to do a runner in his golf cart. So he takes off, trying to head for the exits. He unfortunately hits
a
few people.
They're not the fastest, those golf carts.
No, they're not the fastest, but, you know, they do go a little bit.
Yeah.
He unfortunately hits a few people and then crashes into a cash register, and then they arrest him. What a chump.
Oh, good old Florida Man.
Florida Man at it.
He might become a regular for us.
That's right. All right. Thank you, listeners.
We're done.
It's been a great day for us. Hope it's been a great day for you too. Mm. And we'll catch you next week on the Brett and Louis Show.
Sounds like a plan.
Just the two of us.
Enough.
You've been listening to this week's episode of The Investor Exchange. To access this episode's show notes, go to theinvestorexchange.com.au. And follow us on Facebook at The Investor Exchange for updates on our latest episodes. This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Before making any investment decision, contact United Global Capital by emailing ugc.net.au for a personalised, no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Or alternatively, email us at info@ugc.net.au.